Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It's that time of week where we do our interview. And joining us this week, my man, the greatest student in the history of McClintock Middle School in Charlotte, North Carolina. Also check him covering college football for Stadium. His name is Michael Felder. What's going on, man?
Man, I am just doing my thing, trying to survive Chicago.
Has the Hawk arrived? Because it's a little breezy in New York today.
It hasn't. It's actually unseasonably hot today. And I'm going to tell you what, the winter doesn't bother me in Chicago. It is the summer that I think is the worst part of Chicago because they don't understand the concept of air conditioning.
Oh, gotcha. Because I say summer Chicago is pretty dope.
It's dope when you visit. It's not dope when you live here and people have their windows open and restaurants are like, oh, it's patio season.
You don't, you're not with it?
No. I hate this place.
You sounded so sincere when you said that. You know I got to connect you with Mike.
I don't know if you can make it better, but I would love to connect with Mike.
Oh, yeah. No. I will take care of that. But we both had something that we saw the other day that we both found to be interesting, and I don't even feel like I need to set it up so much as tell Gabe, go ahead and play that.
I feel like I have a little credibility and knowledge about this because when I was at the University of Florida, mm-hmm. I think my jersey was one of the top selling jerseys around the world. It was like Kobe, LeBron, and then I was right behind them and I didn't make a dollar from it, but nor did I want to because I knew going into college what it was all about. I knew going to Florida, my dream school, where I wanted to go, the passion for it. And if I could support my team, support my college, support my university, that's what it's all about. But now we're changing it from my university, from being an alumni where I care, which makes college football and college sports special, to then, okay, it's not about us, it's not about we, it's just about me. And yes, I know we live in a selfish culture where it's all about us, but we're just adding and piling it onto that, where it changes what's special about college football. We turn it into the NFL, where who has the most money, that's where you go. That's why people are more passionate about college sports than they are about NFL. That's why the stadiums are bigger in college than they are in the NFL, because it's about your team. It's about your university. It's about where my family wanted to go. It's about where my grandfather had a dream of seeing Florida win an SEC championship. And you're taking that away so that young kids can earn a dollar. And that's just not where I feel like college football needs to go.
That's fair,
there's that
man.
Opportunity in the NFL, that's but fair. Not in college football.
Oh, boy, Mike, he was heated.
Yeah, I you made me really mad at 9:30 in the morning when we were texting about this. There's so many things. One, this whole idea, we live in a selfish culture now, on a macro problem. No, this is the idea. We live in a corporate culture now where so many corporations are taking money away from people that they've got to look out for themselves because nobody else is going to. And then when we get into the college sports aspect of it, I say this, I was a preferred walk-on at UNC who I was going to gray shirt and then be on full scholarly, and I didn't get the full scholarly because they fired the DB coach and the defensive coordinator that wanted me and brought in new guys. But here's the reality.
Oh, I did not realize
that's what they fired Jim Fleming and Dave Huxtable. Yeah, Huxtable's now doing a good job at NC State.
I say, for people who don't know, the idea of gray shirting is you come in and pay your way the first year and then you get the scholarship the next year.
Right. And didn't happen for me. Okay. I still love being at UNC. UNC was my dream school. I turned down other scholarships to go to UNC. UNC was the school I wanted to be at. UNC was the school that my family dreamed that I would go to. And all those things are all in line with Tebow. My family could afford for me to go to college. Yes, all in line with Tebow. But the difference is I saw what it was like for my teammates. And I played football with a guy from Anson County who said, I would have never left Anson if I didn't get this scholarship. I played football with dudes who I put money down on their cell phone bills. I know that they need money in college because I put money down on cell phone bills. I took guys to the dining hall because my family could afford for me to have a meal plan outside of the facility. And to see them go through that and to think and to know that there's guys that are sending part of their meal check back home, to see guys that are trying to support a child, or to see guys that are trying to live and to think that, hey, they don't deserve money. They should just do it for what? To help the coach pocket more money, to help the university pocket more money. To see that, just I look at that from a Tebow perspective, and it feels like he's not a part of a team. And I can't name names, and I feel bad saying this, but when's the last time we saw Tebow, pics of Tebow at one of his teammates' weddings? When's the last time we heard people come out and talk about him outside of football as somebody that people really looked up to or aspired to be outside of fans and media? Like, where are his teammates at that are defending him?
Yeah, like, you had the same thought I did. It's like, man, did you talk to any of the guys that you went to school with, right? Like, any of these cats that you were playing with, did you have any conversation with them about what their motivations were to get into this or what their circumstances were, how they got there? Because, look, he played at Florida. Like, this isn't quite like playing at Notre Dame where you might be getting a different set of cats. No, no, no. You're getting the dudes that are asked to win SEC championships.
Yep. You're playing with dudes from Apopka. You're playing with dudes from Dade County. They didn't even think that they were going to college. And they had this skill that could get them there. And it's the idea that compensation is going to kill the game. Like, I don't know, like, I'm going to tell you what, Bo. I don't watch the NFL on Sundays. And it's not me taking a stand for Colin Kaepernick. It's not me taking a stand for against CTE. It's not me taking a stand for anything other than I'm not watching football for free. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not watching football for free. And I'm a low level sports analyst. I'm not watching for free. And the idea that he's happy seeing his jersey be up there with Kobe and LeBron's is insane to me. That's crazy. You better get them chippers, dog, because that's not the way the game works.
Like, when he said that part, he's like, you know what? I didn't care. I was like, yo, your people must got paper, man. Right? Like that to me is what that came down to is, hey, your people must, and I mean for real deal paper, because my people wasn't broke, but I'm not looking up at that and being like, wow, what an honor. But like, no, 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 no. Like, to me, the jersey game really got exposed when Jay Billis did something that I'm surprised that I and others had not done, which is you Google Johnny Manziel jersey and it points you to a #2 Texas A&M jersey, which is technically a Texas A&M jersey, but it's really a Johnny Manziel jersey. So they're going to tell you it's not a Johnny Manziel jersey, but their search engine optimization is going to point you to the Johnny Manziel jersey that you were looking for, which is this thing that is not a Johnny Manziel jersey.
The jersey game got exposed to me when, I'll never forget, I was #21 my freshman year, and then we brought in Martell Thatch, who was a 4-star safety. He wanted to be #21, so they were like, hey, loser, go be another number. And I was like, well, I'm not going to be a number in the 30s. I'd rather have a double number. And my double number was 25. 25 was Ronnie McGill. He was our running back, and they were selling his jersey. And I was like, you guys are wearing Michael Felder jerseys now.
I love the thought of your family in the crowd all wearing #25 jerseys and then being like, who is Ronnie McGill? Right? Never heard of him. Like, Ronnie McGill played in the league for a little while. He was on a 4th-round pick.
Yeah. I still talk to Ronnie. He works for the Pats.
Oh, he's still there?
Department. Yeah. He works for the Pats in the scouting department. I still talk to Ronnie. I'll never forget that. Let's get real. I was in, we went back to a dorm room with some friends, and I smashed goldfish all over their carpet. And I literally said, I'm #25. Don't you forget it. And walked out. And, hey, they thought it was Ronnie.
You don't look like Ronnie at all.
No, not at all. Ronnie is built like a tank.
Tell him #25 was here.
Yep. Let's go.
That is amazing. Because, like, one thing, you and I have talked about this over the years of your time in Carolina. I do feel like for a lot of people, they don't have a grasp on what the time demands really are. And so this idea is like, hey, man, right, but you guys are out here, you know, these guys are getting this free education. I'm like, yeah, it depends on how you define two words, education and free.
Yeah. It's you're paying a lot with your body. And I find it interesting to go into the CTE discussion that people are so concerned about the NFL with CTE, but the reality is I'm far more worried about the college kid that's the third string guy that's on hustle team who's running down on kickoffs 8 times on Tuesday to a double team, or who is doing blitz pickup, the fullback that's doing blitz pickup period for the defense. Or I'm worried about everyone that's on. First of all, I'm worried about everyone that plays offensive scout team. Because if you play scout team on offense, you're getting destroyed every day. Those guys get hit far more than in NFL practice. And I think a lot of this is what we're sold. The idea that I'll put it this way. No quarterback should be the face of concussion discussion. No quarterback should be the face of CTE discussion. There's a reason why the guys that we've seen have the biggest issues are offensive and defensive linemen, linebackers, and running backs. And it's because every day they're putting their face, they're going face to face with somebody, face mask to chest. They're hitting their heads consistently. And those are the guys that have the biggest issues. And so if you're not going to be, and everybody loves to spin this quote when they talk about recruiting or they talk about college football, you know, only 1% or whatever the percentages of you will ever go pro. Everybody's going pro in something other than sports. Fantastic. Well, guess what? I've been getting my brains beat in for 4 years or for 5 years for some guys. Having a little bit in the bank or having a little bit to help my family would go a long way to making me feel a little bit more comfortable so that I can go out and start my going pro in something other than sports.
Well, like the CTE part is very crucial to me in part because like one thing, the point that the NFL, I believe they've actually made this in litigation. If they haven't, it's a point I would make when this thing goes to court is how do you know these concussions are ours? Right? Like it's not like magically you start getting concussions in the NFL. Like it's amazing how we compartmentalize these things as viewers based on what the media tells us to do because there is not the same groundswell around concussions in college as there is. And we ignore it. No, man, this dude's faking it through concussions over there. This dude's running down the field on the kickoff team into three guys over there too. But there's no, like, the NFL's argument is you don't know if these are ours. And it's actually compelling because people get concussed a lot along the way.
Yeah. College, high school. It's a brutal thing. I think Boston University is the university that's kind of the leader on CTE right now. And they pulled a guy that played at Snow College, never made it to the NFL. And his brain, he was in his 30s, maybe 40s, and his brain looked like somebody that had advanced stages of dementia. So you don't have to play even big D1 for this to be an issue. So it's one of those things. I think that I am in a unique position because I'm someone and I'm open about this. I've battled depression in general in college and through high school, or not high school, but in college. And UNC helped me get into sports therapy, and getting into therapy really helped change my life. I'm in a unique position because I early on was able to recognize where things were going off the rails for me and be able to battle it. And there's not enough help for other guys because when you get to be 30 years old and things start to happen to you, it's really scary, especially if you don't know what you're doing. And for me, going through therapy as a 19-year-old, a 20-year-old, a 21-year-old, a 24-year-old, I was able to recognize triggers, build a toolbox essentially of coping mechanisms. And like, I know this is in my head. I ran down a field every Tuesday. I used to run down full speed into Madison Hedgecock and Malik Brown. And they both weighed 250 pounds and destroyed me every day. And it's a thing that I know exists. It's just a matter of how you handle it. And we don't. And football, obviously, as macho as it is, nobody wants help. Everybody can do it for themselves. But talking to old teammates that played in the league, talking to old teammates that didn't quite make the league, there's a small swell for people to get into a little bit more therapy, because if you talk about things, you can really figure out how to make things happen.
Yeah, and that's why when Tebow said, what Tebow said was so idealistic, and I was just like, yo, man, what about the actual world? Right, that we're talking about, like the actual players. He was just like, yo, the reason this is so great is because that other thing. No, the reason this is great is because you got a lot of really talented players and people have been doing this for a very long time, right? But this is like the passion around this. It can't be because the dudes are broke. Yes, he did. That was just the part that got me. It was just like, yo, I can't believe that you cannot see this beyond your own existence. And I think that happens with a lot of people. Like, I'm frustrated by people who cover college football and have relate so little to the players or think so much about the players beyond what they do actually on the field. Cause I don't feel like you could actually be around these dudes and know anything about where they came from. And the majority view still be that these guys should be left broke.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. It's, I think it's disrespectful, and quite honestly, I think it's a little disgusting how little a lot of these people in big media or national media understand or relate to the players. Because let's be real, if it's not a feature, the reality is it's not, they don't care. And it's frustrating to listen to an AP voter talk about, like, to listen to an AP voter talk about this, who has never met this kid. And that's one of the things I love about doing recruiting, is I get a chance to go out and meet some of these guys, and I get to talk to them, I get to follow them as they grow up, and to see them, not to see people who don't care. They do not care about any of these kids. And I know I'm in a weird spot, because I play football and I relate to them on the we played football level, and I've been in your shoes level. And a lot of the people just went to J school and they don't relate to them on that level. But man, it really does. It burns me up to the idea that if you think the best part about college football, or the part that you think is the most unique about college football, is the coaches, you are really, really, you're bad for the game and you're bad for the sport.
Yeah, they love the coaches. They really, really, and what's interesting about the love for the coaches is coaches aren't nearly as interesting as they used to be.
No, and the coaches that are interesting, Mike Leach, I mean, he, like, are we going to pretend like this guy hasn't said a bunch of wild conspiracy theories?
Yes.
Conspiracy theory stuff?
Yes.
What? What are we doing?
It is interesting because, he says fun, quirky stuff, but I'm just like, yo, the coach, like, where's my Barry Switzer? Like I said the other day, me and Spence were talking about this. If Dabo kicked it like Barry Switzer, I'd have a whole different attitude about him and Clemson. I'd be wearing Clemson clothes if I could get those guys. Give me a Jimmy Johnson. Like, I'll take any of those cats. All these dudes are like Harbaugh. For all the criticisms there are of Harbaugh, at least I find him to be an interesting brand of maniac, right? None of these other cats are interesting at all.
Yeah, it's and that's the way that I feel. That's the way I try to talk about it, is like, who cares? Like, we know what he's saying. It doesn't matter. I'll tell you what. You want to talk about egomaniacs? Chip Kelly, baby.
Woo! The humbling. The last 5 years have had to be humbling for him, right? One would think.
You would think, but then you listen to him talk, and it's not humbling at all. He still thinks he's the smartest guy in the room. You're 0-3, buddy.
The thing is, he actually might be the smartest guy in the room, but the problem is the people who aren't as smart as him started doing a lot of the stuff that he was already doing, and now it's time for him to come up with something else. And being the smartest guy in the room doesn't matter if everybody else gets to cheat off your paper, and they have. So now you got to take this to another level. And he's like, nah, man, I'm smartest dude in the room. We play music at practice.
14 points per game. 14.
That's it?
For the smartest. Yeah, well, they've scored 14 in every game.
Wow.
For the smartest guy in the room. For a guy who thinks that he can, and I know you're an economics guy, Bo.
Yes.
So he thinks that he can create, demand by shortening supply of scholarship offers.
Oh, he's that guy?
Yeah, they only announce offers on the 8th of the month.
What?
Yeah, 8 clap 8s. They only do offers on the 8th of the month. That's the only time you can announce your UCLA offer if you have one.
Dog, you're UCLA.
Yeah. It's not Stanford, where Stanford only, they don't do a day that they offer, but Stanford offers the smallest pool of players in college football. Because they do a lot of research, they do a lot of talking, and then they finally extend an offer, and their hit rate is incredibly high. But UCLA, you should be Nebraska right now, where you offer everybody. Hopefully some of them come play football for you.
Yeah, like at least Stanford is like, and I always feel like this, you correct me if I'm wrong, the biggest thing that Stanford is selling, and I think this is smart, and it kind of informs my, I disagree with David Shaw about things like player compensation and stuff, but I see why he feels that way, because they're like, how would you like to go to Stanford, right? Like, not even how would you like to play for Stanford. We're getting guys that already would like to go to Stanford, and now I've got your ticket for how it is that you can go to Stanford. UCLA don't work like that.
Yeah, it's not the same. And I love their recruiting hashtag is intellectual brutality, although they did look very slow against Central Florida, and goodness gracious, the Central Florida team is very good. I think Stanford finds, because what Stanford does is they find kids that fit with them. And the fit for Stanford is professional parents who recognize the value of Stanford and have already got their kids started on the AP or the IB track. And we'll go from there. Because if you haven't started this path, you can't catch up your junior year.
Right.
So it's a very interesting thing. And then I will say this. Don't anyone that thinks that Central Florida is not a top 10 team is an insane person.
Yeah, I haven't seen them play this year. I do like the idea, though. Like, I remember when all those schools went from the Big East to the Big 12 or wherever else it was, none of them really kept it cracking like they had it before. This included Miami. And a part of that was the Big East. The Big East was like the Statue of Liberty. Tired, poor, huddled masses. What, can you play football? Yeah. Come on. Oh, yeah. Noel Devine. You cannot seem to get an offer from
these other
places.
I was about to say Noel Devine.
Yeah, like that. Dude, the fact that West Virginia brought in Pac-Man Jones and Chris Henry in the same year.
Yeah.
They are just like, yeah, I can't figure out why these other people don't want these guys. Come on down.
Yeah. Come on. Bring it on down. Bring it on down to West Virginia.
Yep.
Bring it on down to Central Florida.
And say, that's where Central Florida is, except they're already in Florida.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, come on in.
They are one of the fastest teams in the country. I don't understand what's going on with their – this is a tangent, but I don't understand what's going on with their pad uniform combo. Are they getting, like, the B uniforms from Nike? Because – everything for them looks a little bit too loose.
Mm-hmm.
Their shoulder pads are too big, but they are super fast. And Greg McCray is a monster running the football. They got a true freshman quarterback, Dylan Gabriel, who set every passing record in Hawaii. And that means beating out Tua. That means beating out Mariota. That means beating out McKenzie Milton. And he set every passing record in the state of Hawaii. And he's just out there just slinging it around. It's unreal. Like, this is a team that, outside of Clemson, Bama, LSU, Ohio State, and maybe Oklahoma this year, and I'm not saying Georgia on purpose. I didn't forget them, just so you guys know. UCF's looked the best. So I would slot they certainly have looked better than a Florida team that's ranked number 9 in the country.
Yeah, and in Central Florida and Stanford are interesting comparisons because I think I've always – said about Stanford was that Stanford's in a place where they can get big and they can get fast, but big and fast is where they don't really do so well.
Bingo.
And Central Florida is just like, how about fast? We'll work the rest out after fast. We might be able to make you big, but we can't really make you fast. We make you faster, but we can't make you fast.
Yes. Once we get you 3 squares a day, we can get you big. We get you 3 square meals a day. We get you on hard gainers. We can make you a little bigger, but you're going to stay fast. And that's all they do. They run so hard. And I don't know, everyone's like, yeah, LSU took them down in the whatever bowl game they played in. Who cares? But the reality is they still looked fast. This team looked good, and they're going to continue to look good. I think this is the best team that they've had, and this is after essentially going undefeated back-to-back years.
Yeah, that 3 squares point goes back to the Tebow stuff that is important. It's something I think a lot of people do not realize is how many of these great college football players, these athletes, college is the first time that they have gotten 3 square meals a day. Like when you see those guys that gain 75 pounds, it's often because they've never had 3 square meals a day.
Yeah, and I think that's the difference between Florida, Georgia football and then Texas and California football is – in Texas, these guys are in real weightlifting programs, and they are usually, not always, but they're usually eating more. But Florida, and I think Louisiana's in there too. I think Florida, Georgia, Louisiana, we've got guys who they might have one McDonald's a day, or they might have one, their mom made a thing a day, and they have to eat the leftovers. But these kids get to college, and then all of a sudden, they explode into something different. And yeah, I think you're right. For Tebow to go to school at that in Florida, but I mean, he's a homeschool kid too, which is
– that is very
he
true.
He has no idea how the world works.
Yeah, no, like it's funny at University of Texas where we get the most overdeveloped prospects that anybody gets. Gary Patterson is like, hey, you over there, young man, you look a little hungry, but you play good football. I can make you something.
And guess what? Oh, you play safety in high school? I'm going to move you down to linebacker. I'm going to feed you a little bit more. And guess what? Now you're a big boy.
Yep. And really fast.
Yeah.
Switch gears just a little bit here with you. Talk about something that I don't even know if we disagree on, because you know more about these things, obviously, than I do. However, Jalen Hurts has looked really, really good, man. I know you are not the biggest Jalen Hurts backer, but he's looked really good. At least it looks really good to me. How about that?
He has looked really good at doing the same things he did at Alabama. I think the difference is he's playing for a team that does not have a defense that they trust as much as Nick Saban trusted his defense. So when you look at his passing chart, this is the thing that I implore all people, anyone that's listening, look where he's throwing the football. Look where, because most passes are 10 yards and down. If we get into 25 yards and up, we're not seeing any real throws that far. And the throws that he does make that far, we have a coverage bust against Houston where we've got a wide open CeeDee Lamb. And then we've got a bunch of under throws where he lets the defender get back into the picture on a guy that's wide open. And it's not an issue of, to me, it's not an issue of, here's the reality. When you get into talking about elite football teams, you have to make people cover every square inch of that football field. Because if you say, hey, you don't have to cover past 25 yards, that means they're adding two safeties into their coverage pattern in the shallow and in the underneath. And then defense gets a lot easier that way. And with Jalen Hurts, I just don't know against TCU, maybe even against Iowa State, against Kansas State, what this is going to look like if you don't take those safeties out of the box because they're worried about you going over their head.
Well, how much of that can the genius Lincoln Riley scheme around? And I don't mean to be patronizing there because I do think Lincoln Riley's really, really good at this. But, you know, we ascribe a certain level of brilliance to coaches and assume that they can fix just about anything.
You can't. You can't turn him into a guy. You can't turn him into Baker or Kyler. Think about how many times we saw Hollywood Brown or CeeDee Lamb catch the ball 60 yards down the field and then just dance into the end zone. He's not going to do that. I mean, we're watching a plussed up version of Nick Marshall.
Ooh, that's harsh.
I don't mean it as a knock.
Oh, I know you don't. That's the thing. Is that because, I mean, hey, they went to a national championship game with Nick Marshall, right? But
right.
Nick Marshall,
yeah.
I felt like me and him was kind of similar throwing the ball.
I need to cut together a tape of Jalen Hurts' pass over 25 yards because they're off target, they're underthrown, literally, there's an incompletion against Houston where he throws the ball down. He throws the ball down the middle, but there's a one high safety. It's a fake screen. CeeDee Lamb, fake blocks, gets upfield. He's running down the hash. There's nobody to the right side of the hash. And then there's a deep safety in the middle of the field. He throws the ball down the middle of the field short. So the safety who CeeDee Lamb is passed is now inserted into the play, able to break it up. When you could have thrown it deep to the right, CeeDee Lamb turns, pivots, safety has no chance to get it. He could have done essentially it's the same but the opposite of what Joe Burrow did for the post touchdown against Texas. Throw the guy across the field away from the defensive back, and now we don't have to worry about him getting inserted into the play.
Let me ask you this because I'm curious because this seems to be like it'll put a ceiling on Oklahoma. And I mean, you mentioned some teams before, but like the ones that you think have a legitimate chance at winning a championship. Because I found it interesting that you left Georgia out of there. And my worry about Georgia is, hey, man, three straight years they brought in five-star quarterback recruits. And Jake Fromm is good, but he is the least talented of the three. And he's the one who stuck.
Jake Fromm from the mud, baby. I'm not even joking. Like, he's from where my people are from. He's from Houston County. So those boys relate to him. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, we saw this same issue with Hunter Johnson coming in. Jacob Eason and Hunter Johnson aren't that dissimilar in terms of getting into that locker room.
Right.
Outsiders going into a locker room with a bunch of dudes that grew up on their mom's cornbread. And it's really tough to relate to that. I think Fields is the most talented, then Eason, and then Fromm. But Fromm has this, and I think part of it comes from being a baseball player, the ability, the resiliency to just step back up and get back in there, get back into the box and go make a play. But the other big part of it, I think, is being from there. He's of that place, and I don't think that can be undervalued, the ability that he has to he walks into that locker room, and I mean, he's from minutes away from Perry, Georgia. Like, who's from Perry, Georgia?
This is one fun thing about going to Clark Atlanta University. I was like, oh yeah, I once got a girl's phone number from Perry, Georgia.
Yeah, and I go to Perry, Georgia every couple of years because that's where my family's from, and then my mom's family's from Hawkinsville. So my parents might even be related. Who knows?
But I think with Fromm, though, is he from the mud, but that is not an arm I fear. Like, I've heard people say that the problem they got right now is chemistry with the receivers. I'm like, I think that chemistry is part of it, but they also got a quarterback that ain't got much of an arm.
He has a strong arm. I think it's more of a coaching issue in terms of trust, because you got to get reps to really trust him throwing the ball down the field, but they never do it. And I think Kirby Smart is really stuck in this Alabama from 2008 with John Parker Wilson, who gave way to who? Is that A.J. McCarron next or Greg McElroy?
McElroy.
He's stuck in that mold. He's stuck in that mode of these, hey, you know what? Let's play with a limited – let's limit what we ask our quarterbacks to do, and we should be able to win with defense. A defense also similar to the Alabama from 2008 to 2014, where they didn't get to the quarterback really consistently because they just played rules football and they stopped you for a 1 yard, 2 yard gain and then played coverage and you weren't able to complete a pass. And the new Alabama, obviously, they rush the passer obsessively. And with Georgia, we don't have a consistent pass rush, which I don't know if it's going to matter against a Notre Dame team that can't get guys open down the field. But the reality is, Georgia, to me, doesn't belong in that conversation because their offense isn't explosive enough to be Oklahoma. And their defense doesn't get to the quarterback enough to be Ohio State. And their offense isn't explosive enough to be Ohio State either, to be quite honest. And then they're not complete enough like these other teams in terms of being able to get to the quarterback but also being able to score the football like LSU, Alabama, and Clemson.
When's the last time Georgia had an offensive coordinator they were happy with?
I don't know, but I tell you what, I think they're happy right now that they don't have Chaney.
Yes, yes. Now, I do know them being happy, like, hey, we got Brian Schottenheimer out of here, thank goodness, right? Like, they're good for those.
Right. Yeah, they're good for letting a guy go. I know that Coley wants to open the offense up. I think the issue is I don't think what's his name's going to let him do it.
Yeah, and that is interesting because the thing, like what we talked about with Chip Kelly, is a huge difference between him and a guy like Nick Saban. Where Nick Saban has these ways that he wants to do things, and at every turn has looked around and been like, "Oh, looks like we got to do something else," right? Like I think there's a story that went around that Saban was talking to Belichick after Malzahn got that job at Auburn, and was just like, "I don't know what I'm going to do. They score a lot of points," and Belichick was like, "Well, you're going to have to score more." Okay, guess that's what we're going to do now.
Yeah, and Saban adapted to that. It's a massive change and a pain that he didn't want to, a change he didn't want to make, but he did it because he recognized, oh, Clemson's here, and Dabo wants to score 40 all the time. So my whole game plan, my whole world is completely different, and I think that Kirby Smart's not there yet, and we'll see what he does, but I don't believe in this Georgia football team. You're not going to run the football 50 times a game, and that's going to be how you win the title. Because people are going to, at some point, stuff that box. And if you're not going to – they're going to put 8, they're going to put 9 in the box, and they're going to play man coverage on the outside. And if you don't believe in your quarterback enough to challenge them, you're going to have problems.
And you and I say this as a couple of people who really would not mind having a team that just ran the ball 50 times. I'd be good with that. It is, you just can't.
I would be good. Would love it. I'd absolutely love it. But I have a self-plug. I have a taped on line coming out on we did a taped on line on Clemson secondary. And Clemson I think Clemson versus Georgia would be one of the biggest mismatches of supposedly elite teams in college football because their secondary can play man-to-man coverage and they can get to the quarterback and their linebackers are gap sound. Now we're in trouble. You're in trouble, Georgia, because we can tackle you all day. If you think you're going to give the ball to DeAndre Swift 20 times and go make plays, it's not going to happen. And guess what? I've got my man, Nolan Turner, in the back end, who's out there to erase whatever you think you were going to do with your tight end.
Yeah, I don't think people properly appreciate like what Clemson is doing, being like they're in, and granted, like, in-state recruiting doesn't mean quite the same thing that it used to, and they're an hour and a half away from Atlanta, but this is still, like, South Carolina's not supposed to be a state that's big enough to have two schools and one of them be this good. Like, this is some real little engine that could type stuff if the little engine just decided we're going to pour zillions of dollars into football.
Yeah. It's what they're doing is really special. And I think the most special part of it is how many guys transfer from Clemson, right?
Yeah.
Those guys are leaving. They don't have attrition the way you have it at Alabama, the way that you have it at Georgia, the way that you have it at Ohio State. They don't have this attrition. They have guys, with the exception of Kelly Bryant for the most part, they have guys that are willing to sit on the bench to wait their turn. And I think that is, for as much as we kind of make fun of Dabo and whatnot, I think there's something special about that culture and something special about that place that lets them do that. And when I think about, Xavier Thomas, right? Xavier Thomas, he could have been Chase Young. Chase Young at Ohio State right now is probably going to be a top three draft pick. And Xavier Thomas, he had 10 tackles for loss as a backup player a year ago. And just was, he was fine waiting behind Farrell, Bryant, waiting behind those guys to get his turn. And now he's just about to, he's exploding. It's really wild to see the culture of that football team. Oh, and by the way, what sort of bionicle, like what sort of insane things are happening? Amari Rodgers, and this is, I don't want to spring this on you, but I'm going to tell you, Amari Rodgers tore his ACL March 26th. They said, oh, he's probably going to be out for the season. Had surgery end of March, start of April. They said, oh, he might be able to come back for the playoff, which is obviously we know the playoff is in January. Then they said he might be able to come back for the back half of the season, which, okay, he'll be here. He'll be available when we get to November. He's probably going to miss the first month. Okay, so he'll start to play in October. And then he played 30-something snaps in week two. What are we doing?
I fear the answer to questions like those.
What is happening?
It's such a legitimate thing to ask. Like, how in the world are we doing this? How is this happening? By the way, you made a good point when you talk about Clemson not having those guys transfer. I got a hot take here. It's not even that hot when you think about it. These boys that be transferring so that they can go play more, that's hustling backwards right there. Oh, no. Take some time on the oak and let some other people absorb those hits, right? Let those other people put up those bad medicals when they go to the league. I have no problem waiting around till my junior year before I have to start getting hit a couple hundred times a year.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really good point. I will say I don't think that transferring is an epidemic the way that a lot of people keep saying, and I'm very tired of hearing that. Goodness gracious. I think that some guys transfer for the right reason. I think there's a lot. I think if you transfer, you've made a decision. And I think about teammates that I had that transferred, and I think about how it's not easy to transfer in terms of picking all your stuff up, moving it around. Who likes to move, right? Nobody likes to move. Nobody likes to make new friends and lose your old friends. And I don't think that's a reality that many people consider when it comes to transferring. So when I look at this, I think we are legit. I think guys are trying to make their – guys are moving to make their situations better. I think that we also are seeing football's not easy, dude. You can be king. You can be the – whatever comes below king, you can be the prince at one spot, and then you get to another spot, and guess what? You're the prince here too, or you might be the jester. It's not easy to go in there and just think you're going to assume control. It's not easy at all.
But I do think guys need to realize that playing a lot helps the scouts. With scouts, it's kind of like when people used to go in like looking for record deals, right? And you go in, they play your demo tape, they let it play for 5 seconds, and they know within 5 seconds whether they're going to keep going. I feel like there's a lot more of that goes on in football evaluation than people realize. Like they go, like it's like, oh, look at that dude, right? He was the backup. I wonder why he was the backup. He'll start for me, and then you'll probably wind up rolling. But these cats, especially in the SEC, they're showing up with some tattered medical reports, man, because they're getting the hell beat out of them for 3-4 years down there in college. And those are miles. Those miles count. And miles, by the way, they've been logging for free.
Yeah, free miles. Yes, absolutely. And not the free miles that you and I get when we travel for work.
No.
these are Le'Veon Bell. Oh my God, you got 300 carries this year, Miles.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I ain't doing that. Not for these prices.
Yeah. So it's tough. It's really brutal to watch. Like I think about Jonathan Taylor, right? At Wisconsin with running back. Yo, they give him the football so much. And he's going to get to the NFL. And, I mean, through this year, he has 35 carries, but he had 307 carries a season ago. 299, his 18 years old, 299 carries in the Big Ten.
Yeah, that's actually something, like, a little perspective from you on this. Again, as somebody who played ball, the level of soreness and stuff that cats are having, even after a college football game, like, those next 2 days, they look miserable.
Yeah, it hurts. It hurts. It hurts bad. Between the cold tub and massage, you got to do all that stuff to try and get ready. It's brutal. And I don't think, and I say this as someone who, like, I love a massage because I was used to getting them in college because after a week of practice, I hurt. And that wasn't even playing in a game. That was a week of practice. And so these guys are getting, they have to get, you got to get it. Like, that's why they're trying to use these hyperbaric chambers and cryotherapy and the whole deal to try to get ready to play. They're using the platelet replacement, whatever it is, like procedure to try to get ready to play. It's hard. It's hard on your body. It's rough. And that's why I've got arthritis in my hands and in my knees. And these guys are guys that play even more, play even longer, are going to have all, they have all that stuff too.
All right, I have to ask you this because I'm obligated to ask you this. Acho was in the office today. I asked him about it. How you feeling about Texas, man? I'm just kind of curious.
Man, I don't think I've been more disappointed in a defensive secondary that I had high expectations for in a long time. They are – it's not just that they're not good. It's that they are doing things so poorly. And – we're on Friday, we'll have a tape the line that drops that's about Texas' secondary, but it's about their whole defense. But Texas' secondary, to me, is the most disappointing group. When you have two guys that – when you have B.J. Foster, you have Caden Stearns, you have a freshman All-American, you have Brandon Jones, who a lot of people thought would flirt with the first round. The reality of the situation is they're not getting the job done. But I think it also starts up front. This is the idea of one hand washing the other, right, where – your defensive line should get to the quarterback to help your secondary out so you can play coverage. Except each piece, all three pieces of Texas's defense is malfunctioning under Todd Orlando to the point where everybody's trying to help everybody and nobody's helping themselves. They cannot get to the quarterback with four. They can't get to the quarterback with three. So what do you have to do when that happens, Bo? You got to blitz. So when you have to blitz, what do? You're taking people out of coverage. So now you're covering one-on-one, maybe with a single high safety, but you're also playing some zero. You don't have a safety net over the top. So you blitz, but guess what? Oh, we're Texas. We're not going to get there with the blitz. So we don't get there with the blitz. So we've taken two guys out of coverage. We're playing man-to-man. The quarterback doesn't get hit with the blitz. We can make throws. And I know everyone's going to go, well, LSU is super talented. I'm not talking about LSU. I'm talking about Louisiana Tech. I'm talking about Louisiana Tech. And by the way, Kobe Boyce, number 38 DB for Texas, Jamar Smith, the dial-up of blitz with B.J. Foster. He comes up. Foster misses the tackle. Jamar Smith sidesteps it, steps up in the pocket, delivers a throw across the middle on a little dig route. Cornerback goes to swipe at the football, doesn't hit the football. Receiver catches it. Runs 10, 12 more yards up the field. The DB mugs for the camera, the incomplete, like does the incomplete sign for the camera as the guy runs 10 more yards. What are we doing?
I was hoping you might be able to make me feel a little better about things. That's not happening.
I'm going to tell you what, playing Oklahoma State, not going to be no walk in the park.
I mean, no. I think I saw something that said they haven't beaten Oklahoma State in Austin in like 10 years.
Yeah, it's brutal. They got the number one rusher and the number – and here's the other part, play action. If Texas doesn't blitz, so it's a first and 10, Texas doesn't blitz, if a team runs play action, their linebackers know they have to be involved so heavily at the line of scrimmage that they are selling out, even when they see high hat from the offensive line. And, okay, for people that don't know this, it's high hat versus low hat. High hat means the offensive line stands up and they go to pass set. Low hat means that they are driving off the ball, coming at you. And I don't know if Texas isn't taught to read guards, but they aren't reading guards. So play action means the linebackers are now, you know, 1 yard away from the line of scrimmage, which leaves when they should, they're 1 yard away from the line of scrimmage, which they should be 10 yards deep in coverage. But if you're not 10 yards deep in coverage with safeties worried about giving up the big play, now we've got 25 yards for the offense to play in right behind the linebackers in front of the safeties. And I think we're going to see teams take advantage of that. Tylan Wallace loves a deep slant and he loves a dig, so this is going to be a problem.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for nothing. Thanks for nothing at all. I know. I'm not in denial. Look, here's the problem I got. And this is what happens when your team has a head coach that you don't like, right? You feel like you might be being unfair when you're being critical about these things because I really don't like the head coach that they have right now. And all I ask is for my head coach, if I'm not going to like you, to at least coach well. Instead, I feel like they're forcing this Ehlinger thing down my throat. Not that Ehlinger isn't good, but they're just doing too much, right? Like, forget this ain't Vince Young. This isn't Colt McCoy. I don't even think it's Chris Sims. Like, don't do that to me. Don't do that. Just be good. Just be good. All I want you to do is be good. Just be good. Why are you not good?
I like Sam a lot. And I love Brennan Eagles, who's finally coming into his own for this team after, you know, a very slow start to his career as a wide receiver. I think that the not having a reliable run game is a massive issue. That's a humongous issue, right? Like, do you trust this Texas team to pick up 2 yards when they have to?
Yeah, and to me, being able to run the ball at Texas is a no-excuse sort of situation to me. Like, this school, we should be able to run the ball, no matter what happens. Yeah. I don't care about their having one offensive lineman drafted in the last 10, 11 years. This school should always be able to run the ball. How can you not run the ball?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you one thing. So I don't listen to game audio usually when I watch on Saturdays. I listen to podcasts. But when Michigan State plays, because my wife went to Michigan State, she needs to have the sound on to hear it. They happen to play in the same time slot as Texas and LSU. And so I'm flipping between those, and the announcer mentions Texas's offensive line is doing a good job against Clavon Chasen and LSU's defensive line, and then they show an ISO shot of Cosme, and it's just him holding the guy nonstop. And this offensive line is not going to be able to, like, watching that, I was like, oh, they know that they have to hold, which means they know that they can't move people off the ball and they can't control the line of scrimmage. And that's a real problem.
Can you think of something you can tell me happy on the way out, right? I don't want the people thinking there's something wrong with me.
Brennan Eagles is going to be a first-round draft pick at the wide receiver spot. He is really special. He is truly special.
How come Colin Johnson isn't better? See, this is the problem I got. Once you tell me that, I go to the same place.
Once you realize he's not fast and that every throw is going to be more of a back shoulder throw than an over the top throw, you sit on the back hip and then you're able to break those plays up. And so that's the reason why. So what they need to do, he's not Lil Jordan Humphrey, right? He's not, Lil Jordan is fast.
I miss him.
He could get open. He could run away from people. You bring him across the field and he's open. With Johnson, he is very much Laquan Treadwell in terms of being able to go up over people and take the football away. But people have settled into the idea of, I'm going to make sure that I can combat this pass. So I think they've got to retool their strategy with him. I think what they should do is they should hitch people to death with him and let him be a monster in the shallow in terms of, guess what? This little 5'9", 175-pound guy, I get it. You understand you can sit on my back hip and make a play, but guess what? I'm going to start on a fade. I'm going to stop, run a stop route, catch the football, and now it's just me and you in this phone booth, and I'm going to beat the hell out of you. You do that a couple times, the guy starts to get worried. Now you can find opportunity over the top. but I don't think they've worked hard enough to set that up.
All right, man, I'm going to ask you one last thing before we get out of here. Somebody, anybody, don't really matter who, just a really good, fun player that people might not be up on right now.
Ooh, well, Jamar Smith at Louisiana Tech, I really do like his game. I'm going to go with Chuba Hubbard at Oklahoma State.
Oh, okay.
Running back. He's from I didn't even think about that.
Go ahead, Tom.
He's a Canadian running back. And he got there and wasn't sure what to do his first year. And then we saw him start to take over as their primary ball carrier last season. And now I think he is just, he's a guy that they have split out to play in the slot. He's someone that they line up in the backfield. He could run in the interior. I mean, what he did to Oklahoma, where he just destroyed guys, ran through tackles, was last season was amazing. And I think he's going to do a lot more of that. And I'm really looking forward to watching him. Obviously, for your sake, hopefully he doesn't do it against Texas. But I think in general, he's going to be really special.
Look, man, I'm going to tell you this right now. If we out here getting shut down by Canada, it's just time for me to go do something else. All right, if we can't stop Canada on the ground, I don't even understand why we're here. I'm serious, man. You telling me that I need to watch out for Canada? Is that how far Texas has fallen?
Canada.
I mean, them people from them states that's up close to Canada, I understand you might not be able to tell the difference, but we just can't be out here getting regulated on by Canada.
Canada.
And does Mike Gundy still have that mullet?
I've seen the mullet in person. We were at a event together, and it looks worse in person.
Canada and a mullet coming to Austin. Yeah. You better win, Herman.
You saw what T-Boone did, though, right?
I mean, like, other than...
He left him $30 to get a haircut.
Oh, I did not know that.
In his will.
Yo, I love that. I love that. I have to actually tell somebody about this. You ever heard the story about the time I was at the Black Journalist Convention and I saw some 21-year-old walking around with a mohawk and I walked up to him and gave him a dub and was like, go get a haircut right now?
I love that.
He did not go get the haircut. He still owes me $20. But I'll tell you, the next time I saw him, he was at work with a crisp line and cut.
There we go.
Wow.
I'm severely worried about Deion Bush taking my haircut slot.
Yo, I'm still bugging the T-Boone out of all his billions. It's like $30. Get a haircut.
I'm on picking side because you're an adult. You should have a joke haircut.
Yes. Yes. And I also feel like, by the way, if you don't go get the haircut, you're being mad disrespectful to the dead right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Your hair's going to – you can grow back that terrible haircut. Get a real one for once and then grow it back.
Yeah, Mike Gundy's a guy that I thought – when he got the job would be somebody that I would like. And then he just kept on talking.
Yep. Nonstop.
And he has,
can't do it.
And he has the mullet. So
it's you shouldn't have a joke haircut. We're all adults.
Yes. As my daddy put it, you are too old to wear your eccentricity on top of your head.
That's beautiful.
Bingo. Mac Jones to the rescue. That is Michael Felder. Check him out at Stadium. And you're all over the place, man. You know, you'd be out here hitting the Elite 11 camps, all this stuff. Like, you're the man around these parts.
Man, I'm really enjoying my actual job now. I get to work with two amazing ladies in Kristen Balboni and Amina Smith. And I get to do a little podcast with IMG Sports or Learfield / IMG Now, College Sports Now. Get to go to a couple camps and watch recruits play. I get to do a little high school football stuff. So for as much as I don't like my living situation, I like the work that I'm doing.
What did I see a video of that I was like, wow, this is the most on-brand Felder thing ever? It was you and those ladies talking about some television show.
Was it real? Were we talking about Real Housewives? Or I can't remember what it was now. It was... Oh my goodness! Yes,
it was something of the trashy TV that if someone were to say who decided that this is what they're going to talk about, 99.9% of the people would say one of these women, and I know damn well Felder. This was Felder.
Yeah, 100% me. this is the content you were born to do. Pulling the tweet up now.
Yes,
pulling it up now. Would you rather dance? Oh, it was Kristen Balboni's sideline hit.
That's right.
That she did with Icky Woods, who I didn't realize went to UNLV.
Nor I.
And she did the icky shuffle, and we had a nice breakdown of the icky shuffle and Balboni being a just her dancing, and we talked dancing in general. But we do have a basically have a Real Housewives segment on the show now, and we pick a song every week that represents a team, and it gets pretty wild, man. Like I'm having fun.
Honestly, I saw that and I was like, ah, yeah, putting all those years in E-House to use. This is like bridging the gap and meeting new people. You know?
I love like, it. Yeah. Like, absolutely.
Like, which of them was kin to a donor?
Oh, yeah. went to school with Catherine Ehringhouse, actually.
That's right. I knew it was one of the fancies that you went to school with.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think we went to see Tristan and Isolde together.
Everybody that knows anything about UNC finds this hilarious. The rest of you, I guess you'll just have to go.
Yes. It's just all, they're just like, I don't know what any of this means.
That's fine, but you can hear how entertained we are, and you can know that this is also entertaining. There it is. My man, I thank you so much for joining us here, and I thank everybody else for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you again to Michael Felder of Stadium. Also, be sure to check out the latest Woj Pod. He chatted with Clippers coach Doc Rivers and Heat coach Eric Spoelstra. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you're a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.